To God be the glory. You don't even know me, you support me. Waited a whole lifetime for the right time to find the right puzzle pieces for me. Hey, they wanna shove a muzzle on me, can't put me in a box in a corner, paint labels on my soul, send labels to my dough, trying to make a killing off this little black girl paint. Nah. Nigga, I done been without 25 years getting spoon fed out. Come you on. Think you impress me with chains and whips, the same shit that my people's trying to slave about. Never. Nigga, you foolish. You the same kind of cats I went to school with. Man, I learned white people like the back of my hand, the black of my hand, saying, yo, we do this. So you can knuckle up if you want to. Can't be the guy. Ain't you had enough proof? Why you think the devil dipped off? He ain't want no real smoke with a kinky head, bro. So he found you.
Oh, I'm thankful, I'm grateful.
Let's go.
Didn't promise us forever.
Psych your mic, I like my life. If I should die before I fly, remember me sky, consider me light. Take the song, remember me by, cause what is real and never wither with time. I try to write about you, Nikki, think about a million times, but nothing I write was giving me vibes. I thought a song about you, it had to be one where I'm sitting up crying, but instead of sitting up feeling the spot, guessing I belong. It was what you taught me, don't let us see your soul, it'll be all.
Hello, this is Chuck from Above the Basement, Boston Music and Conversation. I first ran into Oompa at One Night Band back in 2018. You can listen to episode 123 for our conversation with Richard Bouchard about that event, but Oompa immediately stood out to me and I quickly put her down as someone to reach out to. Fast forward almost exactly a year later and I happily got a chance to sit with her and also guest host and hip-hop know-it-all Ike Walker for a great conversation. Oompa is fresh off her two Boston Music Awards for Best Unsigned Artist and 617 Sessions winner and is currently in the studio to release her next album. We talk hip-hop, of course, but also discuss teaching, writing, and her being the gay auntie of Boston. Oompa is all energy and is passionate about her music, poetry, and the city of Boston. I think her website, appropriately named oompaoutloud.com, says it all, and I quote, "Oompa is a nationally acclaimed Boston-born poet, rapper, and educator who is forever representing the queer, black, orphaned hood kids and them." So here is our conversation with Oompa, recorded at Woods Hill Table in Concord, Massachusetts. Let me hear you, brother.
Oh, yeah. I haven't been talking
yet. Good.
He's
got that voice.
Wow, that voice.
He's got the voice for radio.
Yeah, sure does.
Yeah. I'm not going to say you have the face for radio, but
no,
you do have the voice
for
radio.
You're welcome. I appreciate that. You know, Joe takes the pictures. They end up on the website, so people do know what I look like.
That's true. And actually, we're going to do the Ike's Likes.
That's right.
You're the first to hear about this.
Ike's Likes?
Yeah. So in the newsletter, I'm going to start making some recommendations of some of my favorite moments from the podcast.
Oh, hell yeah.
So he's probably the only person other than me who's heard every single episode.
Yeah.
That's not even my code, my usual code.
It's not much of a claim to fame. But
wow.
Yes, it is. What are you talking about?
Yeah, certainly.
120 plus episodes.
You're the only second person.
Next to you, you said.
Yeah.
Next to me.
Because Chuck edits them all, so he's got to listen to every second.
But even my co-host, who's been on almost every one of them,
hasn't listened to it.
Yeah. Chuck's in it too deep because he edits it, so he has to listen to everything so many times. But I just get to listen to the nice finished product.
That's really awesome.
Except when I'm lucky enough to get to stand in an interview like today.
Wow.
Yeah, he's done a few. Who else have you done?
We did Ryan Montbleu.
Yeah.
I did Miami Sound Machine. But I did Julie Rhodes.
Julie Rhodes. You know Julie.
Oh, yeah. I love her. Yeah, she's awesome.
She was great. I remember it was a rainy night when she came out and we interviewed her. And then we went out to her van and she had some vinyl and gave us each a
record. That's right.
Shut
she
up. Has yeah, that cool. sounds like sounds about right. Every time I see her, I feel like a better person.
She's great. So I first saw you, I think the first time. It must be almost a year ago because One Night Band is happening next week.
Yeah, it is.
Or at the end of this week.
Yeah, it is.
And that's where I first saw you.
Yeah. Oh, wow. Okay.
I met a whole bunch of people that night.
Yeah,
great people. And we ended up getting a lot of people on. So you've been on our list for a while, especially of Alyssa Spector.
Oh, that's my girl.
Shout out
to her. She's dope. I love her.
She's fantastic. I'm glad you're finally here.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
And we both just saw you at the BMAs.
That's right. This is great timing because I wasn't at One Night Band last year, but I was at the BMAs, so I got to see you on stage.
That was
so
fun.
It was a good time.
I got a belt since then, so
yeah.
No worries.
But that was great just to see you as an MC up there,
yeah.
Just sort of owning the stage.
Thank you.
That was really tight.
You brought the house down.
It was fun.
Were you expecting that?
I don't know what I was expecting.
Yeah,
because, I mean, you know, hip hop is sort of like doing this new thing in space, it feels like. So I didn't know what to expect.
For who? For you or for the...
Well, I think for the city at large, the music scene at large. And like, I'm still young in the game. I've only been out now 2 years.
Yeah.
It was one of my goals for the year, for last year actually, and then it happened this year to like be on that stage. It was like this weird moment. Yeah, seeing people's responses, like I walked away being like, I could have gave a better show, but also
it was fantastic.
That was a great time from the audience.
It was great. Yeah. And I tell you, as soon as when you walked out, the audience blew up.
Yeah, it was beautiful.
And you looked like you were having a good time.
I had a great time. I love performing. It's like my favorite thing. Not like, it is next to rapping my favorite thing.
You were nominated for 6 awards. And you got Unsigned Artist.
Yep.
And the 617 Sessions.
That's right, yeah.
We take a lot of pride in a lot of our guests.
Yeah.
Either future or past guests.
Yeah.
We're nominated, are always nominated. Ally McGurk was up there. Contact. Contact play? No, I just saw them.
Not playing, but they weren't playing, nominated.
But they were there. They were nominated. Yeah. So yeah, we take great pride in
a lot of past and future guests that were at the BMAs. But another thing I loved about your performance is how you showcased your band.
Yeah.
You know, you went through and let them each solo and do their thing.
Yeah. Like, they've been really huge to my year. I just, I've been, for one reason or the next, been really afraid to like put out new music because the first album did so well, compared to nothing. And I've been like feeling like a lot of pressure. So I've been like wanting it to be perfect and maybe sometimes overthinking it, but the band, like creating the band, has helped me to like reinvent the songs each time we play them. So it's been like just a new experience for me doing the songs over and over again, and they've just like really been supportive in this last year. So it's just every time I get the chance to like give them solos or like play with them, I will absolutely.
So how long is that band, have you been with that band?
And we just had our 1 year anniversary.
Okay,
yeah,
nice.
We've had a couple of people in and out, you know how bands go, but the band has been around for over a year now, which is really cool.
Can you name the band?
Jordan Carter is my drummer. Okay. Marquise is my guitar player.
Okay.
Die from formerly known Radcliffe Hall.
Okay.
She's my bassist.
She was great. I remember watching her. She was really cool.
She's fire.
Because she did a couple of instruments there.
Yeah, she plays key bass and guitar bass. Yeah. And she's a vocalist, which is really cool. Tim Hall is my sax player. And then RJ Walters is my keyboard player. Yeah. Yeah.
They're great.
Yeah, they're awesome.
That's a lot of people.
Yeah, yeah, I like it like that. I think I'm gonna add one more. This is like trombonist who like keeps reaching out.
No, they're all really solid. Really great. I mean, I liked how you gave them all their space to do what they're going to do.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah. That was a lot of. It's always fun playing with them.
Do you call them anything? Are they called like
the Chocolate Factory?
The Chocolate Factory.
Yep. Go figure, right?
Nice. Oompa, I got it.
Yeah. Yes, see, some people are like, oh, that's a thing, huh? Yeah, it's a thing.
Nice. Well, I'm really, really glad to be here tonight interviewing you, that Chuck gave me this opportunity because, you know, so Ron is the co-host most of the time. I sit in for him sometimes, but I'm sort of the biggest hip-hop fan amongst the hosts. I've been listening to your album. I really wanted to get a chance to talk to you.
Wow,
so
thank you.
I'm psyched about that. And I'm also really curious in your journey, you know, as a slam poet who got into rapping. You know, I find it really fascinating to sort of think of similarities and differences both in those, you know, and that's one of the things I noticed listening to your album is you have such a diversity in your flow and also your vocal styles.
Mm-hmm.
And I wonder if you can talk a little bit about how that comes from slam poetry, where you don't have the beat, right?
Yeah.
That's all you have. It sort of forces you to do more with your voice.
It's interesting because I actually started rapping first.
Yeah.
But I was a very closeted rapper. In middle school, we used to battle rap, and then I put it away in high school because now I was like interested in girls and like being cute and cool, and I didn't think that rapping was that thing. So I like put that away, and I started writing poems because like now poems is the more sophisticated thing I'm thinking, right? And so I got into that, and then I really liked it, and I started researching and like expanding like my knowledge of slam poetry. And I got really into that, put it away for some time, and after college, got into the slam scene as an organizer. You know, I would come and I would listen and I would try. And it's really an intense experience in that, like, you're really naked out there. It's just you, your body, and your voice, no props, no accompaniment, and there's a bunch of people who have scorecards ready to judge you for it. If not basketball, then slam poetry definitely set me up to be a rapper.
Yeah.
This is a very competitive genre of music. And I think it also, like, really forced me to think about my stage presence and how to use space genuinely and take up space genuinely genuinely in a way that connects with the audience.
Yeah.
I've really tried to hone that this like last year as a music artist, because I thought that that was one of the most captivating things to me about any performer, but particularly slam poets, was just the way that they don't have much to use. Okay, so then now I don't have to rely on anything. And then when I add those things in, how does that enhance my performance or my music instead of become a crutch for it?
Right. Yeah. I mean, to me, it's interesting the way slam poetry, there's such a range in the stage presence you can have.
Yeah.
You know, you can kind of go quiet, you can go big.
Yeah.
Like, there's really sort of vulnerable moments.
Yeah.
Whereas as an MC, when you're up there rapping, it's much more like you kind of have to have that bravado and showmanship, you know? So I wonder if that, is there a challenge, you know, when you're up there with your band and you're rapping, when you like, you have to bring it big, you know? Is there a way that that limits you at all? Or do you feel like it's just, it's all good?
I think it's all good. Like, I feel like, I think the slam poetry taught me that the dynamics of like the big and the smalls are okay. Like when I first became a poet, but also when I first started like rapping out loud, I felt like this pressure to be big all the time. And I think slam poetry taught me to take the space I needed, needing to just be stationed at the mic, to just be small and vulnerable, and also know when I'm running across the stage and just having a good time and partying.
You know, it's interesting that you say about the space, because a lot of times you feel like, I'm not going to say it. I swear to God, I'm not going to say it.
Okay, right.
Just so pretend I'm not going to say it. People have, when they're on stage, they're going to have a problem with silence.
It's true.
Right? So they feel like they have to either do something physical or keep on talking.
Yep.
And then they get themselves into trouble if they don't know what they're doing.
Yep.
But making that space, it's part of the process there. How do you use space in that? Do you use space in that capacity?
I think so. There are times when I'm nervous, or I think I still like succumb to that pressure sometimes, or if it's a silent moment, or if it's a really intense moment, I'll break it up with some laughter or some like awkward banter, because that's just who I am as a person.
Yeah.
But there are times when I think like the silence and a subtle something dropped in there is like way more powerful than hitting you over the head constantly and then dropping off the cliff, you know?
Yeah.
So I think like sometimes I really think about that when we're arranging the sets, like when we're arranging the songs during rehearsal, to try to figure out, like, I feel like this is a moment where we need to fade out. We need to wash out completely until we're nothing. And I have to stand there and like wait until this is done, until it's like called this final moment. And I have to be okay with that. That silence and the fact that people are staring at me and not saying anything. And that doesn't mean something bad all the time.
Well, that's rehearsed.
Yeah.
Is there any improvisation?
Oh, I think that when I say that, I just mean like I have to practice the feeling of being okay with silence. But like there are moments where it just happens.
I think that's
okay.
Yeah, practicing the feeling of silence, I think that's really important.
I think it's a good practice in life.
Yeah.
Sometimes we just gotta know when to shut up.
Yeah, Ike doesn't know when to shut up.
Oh, Ike. Don't let him say that. Ike, what's your sign? Taurus?
Nope.
Pisces?
Nope.
All right, got one more. Scorpio?
Nope.
Okay, one more. Leo?
Nope.
Okay, I'm not good at this.
That was close, though.
Yeah, it's all close, right? Yeah. I jumped all over.
You use letters. Yes.
Yeah, the last one was close. That's funny, though. I thought you might do that, because I've been following you on Twitter.
Oh,
and I noticed
you
talking about how sometimes you just walk in and you can just guess somebody's signs.
Sometimes.
I was like, oh, is it going to come in and
nah,
get
me
right away?
Do me.
Aries?
I haven't.
No.
Showed.
Gemini?
No.
I'm not going to get this.
Yeah.
Yeah, shoot.
I'm a Cancer.
Wow. Did not guess that. Yeah.
But I'm right on the border of what's the known after Cancer.
Oh, yeah, you're Gemini, Cancer.
I'm on the other side of it.
Yeah.
So I'm July 20th, so I'm also a Cancer.
Wow.
Look at you. We're Cancers.
Never come up before, yeah.
Can you talk a little bit more about improvisation? Is there a lot of improvisation up there? Not only lyrically, maybe.
Yeah.
You let the musicians go off, too. Yeah. So you got to kind of give them their space to do what they're going to do.
Yeah.
And you got to kind of feed off of that.
For sure.
And can we even go back to like your battle rapping days? Like how much of that was freestyle versus...
I think a lot of what we do is improv. We have these really small rehearsals and we're like, yeah, we got this locked. It's all good. And then I get on stage and I'm like, actually, I don't want any of what we rehearsed. Let's do it this way. So like I've got these signs that I do, like general signs. Like I need you to speed up. I need you to fill this space. I need you to drop out here. I want the bass. And I know where they are. So I'm like, you and you, like, come on. That's the best part of the show for me, the live show, especially with the band, is just being able to go with a moment that moves me. But also, I care about my craft enough to not just completely improvise something and let it go to the wayside and not know some of the outcome. Every time I say something on stage, just about, it's completely freestyled. There are things that I do in my show now that are built just because I freestyled something and I was like, I like what I said there. That was good. Every time I perform and somebody records it, I watch every single video multiple times. So I'm like, I want to keep that. Like, I do this thing at my show. It's called a family reunion because for whatever reason, I'm like everybody's gay auntie, right? So I'm like, what better way to accommodate people in a space where they might feel awkward standing next to a stranger and having to dance to the music of someone that they don't know than to like have this family function in the middle of the show? And that came just because I said I was somebody's gay auntie and this is a family reunion. I said, how do I make it a family reunion? But like, I play a couple of the like the Black family function songs. And like, when I say you're my cousin, I don't care who you are in this audience. You are my cousin today. I'm your aunt or whatever the case is. And I play these songs and I'm like, hey, y'all, we're going to get these like line dances down. And then once we're doing these things, like, you have to converse with someone in the audience and say a thing. And then they come back and we listen to another one. And it's like, by the third one, we've all got this trust and we've got each other. So let's get this done. And then they get it done and everybody's into it. And then we kind of like embrace and everybody's in the family. I always want to come out, especially now, like in this new stage of like being a new artist, I like want people to know who I am when I come out on stage. So I come swinging, I think, and then I'm just like, hey, you're going to get all of me.
Yeah. Does anybody know how much a heavy heart holds? How much a heavy heart weighs if a heavy heart grows? Does anybody know how to keep the heartbeat steady? How to levy a heavy heart to keep bleeding from being deadly? I tell you what I found. Heavy hearts can shed the pounds. If they love what made them heavy, they can loosen up the bounds. If a heavy heart chooses to love what put it through it, tell me who pays the price. The game where heavy hearts be losing. She rolled up on my heart and ripped that right up out my chest after she blamed me for the pain it caused. Now it's mine, she said. Then she asked, is this a gift? As if her hands ain't gripped my neck, snatched me down to force my crown. And since I tried to resurrect everything I make, I hate. Still I love her though I'm scarred. How she peel away the scab so that I don't forget the war. How we sparred until there's nothing left and fill the space with gods. Liquor and empty promises, symbiotic facades. It calls for coke, hanger, abortion. I throw daily contortion. It's reparations, extortion. What you call it's important. This is best make it happen. This is no more it on it like Jesus born in a manger. Where you start ain't important. This verse probably ain't potent. Cause you still say I'm yours. I still hear you say love you. I still come open arms. You come holding your arms. It's ruthless. How you rather see me dead than recognize me as human? But if I should die before I wake, I hope my goons forgive you. It's proven ain't no weapon like a Black woman who's vengeful. Say her name. I ain't playing, just say her name.
I can't remember where I saw this, but you were... Oh, I saw it in Dig Boston. Mm. You were named Boston's most positive rapper.
Yeah. That's wild to me. Everybody keeps saying that. That's so wild. I don't know. I just believe everything. I think things are beautiful. And this world is going up in flames. And I think there's so much beauty in it still. I got 75, 80 years. I'd like really want to hold on to my joy.
There was something that I saw, something that you said. I can tell you about all the misfortune I had along the way, and all of it was crucial to making that joy as happy or impactful as it was.
Mm-hmm.
That sounds pretty positive to me.
Yeah.
I mean, everyone has their problems. That's how you use it. For a positive result.
Absolutely. No, I always joke about that because I often feel very cynical. But I think you're right. And especially in the last year, I've been talking to a lot of people that really mean a lot to me as a person, as an artist, as a business person. And one of the things I just keep taking away constantly is that all I have is my perspective and all I have is my joy. I have a lot of choices. Like, I'm not completely without autonomy, or I'm not without autonomy. My circumstance around me can be terrible, but like, there's some part of me that is responsible for the little joy baby.
I like
that
little joy baby.
Yeah. Little joy baby.
Yeah, and it, you know, the people who named you Boston's most positive rapper obviously listened to the whole album, right?
Yeah,
because
yeah.
You can cherry pick like songs or moments in it where the content in your album is like, there's a lot of heavy stuff on there.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know? But like, if you listen to it as a whole, I think it does come out positive.
Yeah, absolutely right.
You know, there's definitely like, I could see the
joy
baby.
My joy
in there.
Baby, yeah.
That should be the name of your next album.
Joy baby.
Yeah.
That's it.
Why?
You know what? Thank you.
Yeah, there
Thank you
go. You. Okay, you can credit us in the liner notes.
Oh, say less.
Why did you call the first album November 3rd?
November 3rd is the day I lost my mother. In 2009, it like really changed the course of my life, it felt like.
Yeah.
You know, I went through a lot in that time that I think made me, but also helped me decide that, okay, I've been through so much. Also, I'm still living this life that I thought was for my mother, you know, or like that I thought was to make the world think I was less a stereotype of something.
Yeah.
And then I started to think about that I wanted to live for me, or that I couldn't live entirely unless I was choosing to live for me and do what I wanted to and do what I loved and like follow that voice inside of me. And my mother would love nothing more. Like as an adult, I'm seeing that it's not about, you know, college. It's not about the 9 to 5, the noble job necessarily. Like it's not just about that as a thing. It's about what it is that I want to do as a person and be as a person. And I decided I'm going to name this album November 3rd. It's going to come out on November 3rd. And I'm going to re-remember. I'm going to remember that day for being a very important day in my life for all the reasons it is. And I'm going to try to re-remember it also. Like I don't want this to only be a day of mourning. I want this to be also a day where I say, okay, I got you from here on.
How old were you when she passed?
18.
18.
Yeah.
And you had a song on the album, Dear Mama.
Dear Mama. Yeah.
Which was like, that was a great song.
Thank you.
And I could hear a lot of what you're talking about there.
Yeah. You know?
This for the products of the foster care system. All missing mamas on their birthday on Christmas. From the distance of a pearly gate, wondering if they listening to the cries and reminiscing how their babies really missing. Tell me what they know, it's when we get to heaven. Could we recognize them even if we met them? Could we let them know how much we really care? The risen too late for sorries, cause yeah, of forgiving yeah. Them, huh? Dear mama, fuck nah, dear mom, I'm sorry. Hey mama, I'ma get started, I promise. It's harder than I thought. Dear mama, fuck nah, dear mom, I'm sorry. Hey, mama, I'ma get started. I promise. It's
the first thing I think when I hear Dear Mama is I think about the Tupac song.
Yeah.
Of the same name.
Yep.
It was a different song.
Yeah.
But still, it's like a tribute, you know.
Absolutely.
And I thought that came across. I was listening to it sort of thinking about the Tupac song and his flow and the way he has, maybe I'm getting to be too much of a geek here, but
no,
like
you're
the way
right
he
on.
Has like... He has like a rest on the 4-beat. It's kind of his style. And I was listening to yours, and you have like the emphasis on the 4-beat.
See, he's pretty good at this, right?
Yeah, you're really good at this.
I don't know where the influences or the relation are. It's totally random. But just when I was listening to the song side to side, that was something that jumped out at me.
Yeah, I won't lie. I think Tupac was like an icon for me in a cultural sense. I learned a lot about fearlessness, and I learned a lot about emotion and passion from Tupac at this like distance, but
right.
And I think because as a 90s baby you had to be, I was definitely a Biggie fan.
Yeah
I was definitely a Biggie fan, but I think Tupac's cultural impact, no matter how many albums you listen to of his, like he had on hip hop and black culture.
And also the, you know, there's another one that comes up. You have the Black of the Berry, the Strange of the Fruit.
Yeah.
Which is, I think, a great way to take, you know, two phrases and a metaphor, you know, and then, but like sort of mix it up.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
And reference Strange Fruit, you know, which is such an iconic, story of American race.
Absolutely.
You know, and
absolutely.
You take that with the Black of the Berry, you know, the Sweet of the Fruit, which is also like a Tupac lyric.
And Kendrick Lamar.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Kendrick did it. Tupac did it. It's, you know, goes way back.
Yep.
But I thought that was interesting when that came up, and I loved how you sort of wove those together.
Thank you.
And that's one of the things I love, just, you know, as I listen to your songs over and over again, the things that, you know, maybe I missed the first time or the second time or the third time and I'm listening and I just get like the layers of the metaphors or the way you interweave it a little bit, you know.
Thank you.
You know, you're feeling kind of Tim Burton.
Yeah.
Kind of sleep, kind of hollow. You know, I love that. I miss it a couple times and then it hits me and it's always good.
Wow.
And that's one of the things I love about hip hop is the way you can, like, you can get into the beats and the flow and like you not even notice a lyric for a while, but then it'll come up and when you listen you get that.
You
and
get it.
Like,
thank you. I'm a sucker for good lyrics. I'm a sucker for a story too.
Nice.
Yeah, thank you for that.
Which reminds me, I meant to ask you about your writing process, because this is always something that's really interesting to me in hip hop.
Please.
Do you have the beat when you write? Do you write to the beat or do you write without the beat?
So I write every day. I try to write one thing every day, and sometimes that means that I'm not able to listen to music because of where I am. But I generally like to listen to the music first, and then it tells me what it wants to be. I know that sounds corny maybe or cliche, but I listen to it and the vibe of it or whatever is speaking to me is like the song that it becomes. So there are songs that like I write to one and then never becomes anything,
right?
But then, you know, I hear this other thing and I'm like, oh, that should totally live over here. Like, that's where that belongs. And it'll be better off or worse off. I don't know. But
So you do like to write to the beat.
I do.
Most of the time. Like, okay, cool. Well, I was guessing the other way because you were with your slam poetry background. Maybe not.
But it's so funny because I can only write poetry in complete silence.
Yeah.
Yeah, I can't. Some people like to listen to music. Listen, I can't. Complete silence for me.
It's interesting.
The entry point is different for me.
Yeah.
I thought I saw a video of you and another woman.
Yeah.
And you were kind of doing this back and forth.
Yeah, it was a group poem.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That was really interesting.
So, yeah, thank you.
How does that work when you're working off another partner like that?
Yeah, so basically...
can you explain what I'm talking about?
I know exactly what you're talking about. Yeah, so there are venues across the country that hold...
Thank you, Tay.
Poetry slams, and what they do is they create teams of five or more, to send off to this national competition. So over the course of 3-4 months, these teams write and practice individual poems, and they practice what are called group poems. Mm. Each individual in the group poem has a part in a play, and their presence is supposed to be intentional. You're supposed to play with space and dynamics and like think about what it means to be in conversation with each other's bodies and words and et cetera. And so I was on a team in 2016, and my former partner and teammate and I had this idea while on a retreat, a writing retreat. I forget what was the prompt. Oh, it was to break the fourth wall. That was the prompt. So I was like, how do we get people to engage? How do we get people to know this is a poem and engage with it and like kind of break this fourth wall? And I thought about call and response because that's a thing I'm very familiar with. And it went from there to like where do we go? What do we want to say? How do we want to do this? And we wanted to talk about the school to prison pipeline because we were both teachers at the time. We continued to just kind of think about ways to make it innocent and draw people in, get them engaged. And it was like, okay, this game is Simon Says. So everyone knows Simon Says.
That's right. Simon Says.
It's universal, but we want them to pay attention. We want to draw them in and to not know what the heck happened to them.
Yeah, that was a real powerful poem. I remember watching that. And like, it's amazing what a journey you go on in a short period of time.
Yeah,
from this sort of innocent, you know, game of Simon Says when it like it gets real very quickly.
Yeah.
And I do love that dynamic of you, you know, and the other people on the team. Thank you. Sort of going back and forth with that.
Yeah.
You used to teach or are you still teaching right now?
I do not teach. I'm a full-time artist now. But
so what were you teaching before?
I taught math. Middle school math. Yeah. No, I was a math major in college.
Where'd you go to school?
Bucknell in Pennsylvania.
Okay.
So I was a math major for some time and then I switched over to English. So I was teaching English and civics for a little bit, but I was mostly a math teacher for middle school.
How old?
Middle school. So 6th, 7th, and 8th math.
You miss it?
I miss the kids. They always say that you never leave a job because of the kids.
I taught for a little bit. I taught high school.
Yeah.
Years
What'd
ago.
What'd you teach?
I taught history and sociology.
Oof.
Yeah. And I knew nothing about sociology. The sociology teacher was sick. And they say, Chuck, you're going to teach sociology.
Yep.
I'm like, I don't know anything about it. They go, here's the textbook.
Yep.
So it's not about knowing it. It's about teaching it.
Yeah. Which
not
is
that I knew how to do either of those things. But
yeah.
You're doing up here in Boston?
Yeah.
Whereabouts?
In Dorchester at Tech Boston Academy. And as much as I want to work with young people, this is not the capacity I feel strongest in, and I felt that I became a better teacher when I became an artist.
That's your path.
Yeah. There's a lot of ways to teach. Yeah,
absolutely.
And it reminds me of a recent moment on the podcast, actually.
Yeah.
When you were interviewing
Zena. Tell me what you like.
So Cinderella just came through.
Uh-huh.
And the woman who played the fairy godmother, Zena, was on the podcast.
Yes.
Mm. And Ron asked her at the end of the
episode, Zena Ellis.
Mm-hmm. Ron asked Zena Ellis, you know, who are the modern day fairy godmothers? And she thought about it for a bit. And then she said, teachers. She was thinking back to her life. Teachers are fairy godmothers. And gay aunties, too.
And gay aunties. That's what I'm trying to be, is everybody's fairy gay auntie. Yes. Wow, that's great. Thank you.
I am interested now, you know, now that you're a rapper, how much are you going to stick with the slam poetry? Are you both, or is that you're sort of done with that?
I'm trying to...
Full-time on the rapping.
Full-time rapping.
Yeah,
I want to chase this thing through, and I want to create a body of work I'm happy with. I want to make my living from the thing I love, and then be able to afford the space and opportunity to hone different crafts as a 28-year-old. I want to just kind of be tunnel vision right now.
So I am curious how much you want to open that door a little bit, though, because on your album, you did have the interlude, right, where you did Black Hole.
Yeah.
So was that Space Time Continuum, which was one of the ones you did in 2016.
Yeah.
At the Poetry Slam. So I'm curious whether you're interested in sort of playing with putting a little bit of slam poetry into the albums, because I know it's not something I've seen a lot. I know Lupe Fiasco usually has spoken word at the start of his albums.
Yeah, Mick Jenkins has done it.
And I think it can work really well, but I'm curious it sounds like you're more focused. Like that was like I thought it worked really well the way you worked that into the album, but maybe that's something you're kind of not going to try to do because you really want to focus.
So I'm writing a chapbook at the same time.
You're writing a what? I'm sorry?
A chapbook. It's like the mixtape of poetry books.
Okay.
I'm writing one of those now as we speak. So I'm not done writing poems. I think I'm done competing and maybe organizing poetry spaces as an active member, competing on teams and that sort of thing. And it might make its way onto some other works. As of now, it'll come under the umbrella of me as more of a musical artist.
But while we're on the subject of progress and barriers, you know, as a queer female rapper, I'm curious, you know, how much you see acceptance, you know, in the hip hop community, you know, at least lyrically, in terms of lyrical content.
Yeah.
Hip hop has a legacy of being, you know, fairly misogynistic and sometimes homophobic.
Yep.
The lyrical content doesn't necessarily represent you know, the rappers or the community. So absolutely. I'm just curious what your, you know, experience has been like just being, you know, a queer female rapper, being open and just coming out, you know. Like, do you feel like that's still a barrier? You know, you got the performing spaces now, but, like, is the world ready for a queer female
rapper?
Plus,
it's in your lyrics.
They got to be. I mean, they better be. I'm coming. Yeah. They got to be ready. I'm coming. And I ain't playing either. So, I mean, listen, everybody has gay auntie. And that's just what it is. But no, I'm just who I am. And I run the risk of being gay and black and woman every day when I walk out of my house. So I'm not gonna not be that when I get on the stage and do the thing I love. So my experience has been one where I can't tell if people dislike me or not for the most part because of that, because I don't care. And I don't usually do this, but I'll just say this. I can hang with the best of them. I can rap with the best of them, and I daggone sure can write with the best of them. And so I focus on that, and I think that people who don't like me for who I am, I'm not afraid of them on the internet. I'm not afraid of them when I leave my house like in my sweatpants, and I'm not afraid of them when I'm on the stage. It's the same risk, and I'll take it every day.
Yeah, but that's good. I mean, it's, you know, you don't have time to worry about that, right?
Yeah.
And it's like, and I do think a lot of times, you know, I brought it up as sort of the difference between the lyrical content and the reality, you know, that like some people who don't necessarily understand hip hop may just sort of look at the lyrical content and like stop there, you know, and that doesn't necessarily represent what it's all about, right?
Yeah, for
and
sure.
It's like there's, you know, there's sort of a legacy of rapping in a misogynistic way, and it's sort of the braggadocio, but that's not like the real of who the people are, right?
Yeah.
I loved when you came on at the Boston Music Awards. Mm. It was like, I think it was pretty much the first thing you said. It's like, we're going to get gay right now.
Yeah. That's right. I'm pretty sure that was probably the first thing.
And I thought that was great. You know, like, you don't need to like hold it back and like, you know, you just come out and say, we're going to get gay.
Yeah.
And everybody was ready to have a good time and go along the ride.
That's it.
You,
so. And I try not to hit nobody over the head with it. Like one of my favorite people in the world does not accept my queerness.
Yeah.
And like, I've learned, I think we both learned how to love each other despite that. So like, as long as you let me live my life, I let you live yours. If you don't understand, I'm not mad at you.
Yeah. Yeah. It's good to be real about it.
Exactly.
You know, I mean, it's 2019 now. I think about like 25 years ago, I'm thinking about like Melissa Etheridge singing and like people, you know, she was out, but she was like, I'm going to like my lyrics, I'm not going to use pronouns. Right.
Right.
I'm going to be very neutral and like the world will accept it. And like, We've come a little way since then.
So
it's
going to
be a little
lot
more.
Of ways. You hope.
Knock on wood. I'm trying. I've turned a new leaf in my life for various reasons, which we won't get into, but I'm trying to read more. I'll read a little bit, but I'm not like a heavy reader.
Mm-hmm.
Are you a reader?
That's an interesting question. No.
Yeah.
And I had a lot of shame about that for a long time.
I did too.
Yeah, I've always loved language, but I just never was a reader. And I try to like...
It's a muscle.
It's a muscle.
Yeah, you gotta use it or you know, it's hard to get
going. The way
my
attention span is, and I'm like, But you know what? Like, I do try. Like, I try, like, to get as much in it as I can. But I, like, I'm doing it from a shameless place now, or I'm working to do it from a shameless place. And also, like, accept the fact that there's so many ways to ingest knowledge that isn't like this visual like reading thing.
Sure.
And that's perfectly acceptable.
I've started making a list of books.
Yeah.
As a matter of fact, those books have kind of piled up and I still haven't hit them yet.
Me too. I have a whole bookshelf full of stuff I don't even remember getting.
But I am taking a class. Mm-hmm. I'm gonna go for my master's in history.
Mm-hmm.
I'm screwed if I don't read.
Oh yeah.
I gotta read.
You gotta read.
I just got two books. I gotta read them by Wednesday before my class. No. So I'm forcing
notes.
Me. Not these books don't have cliff notes.
Yeah, unfortunately, it's a whole history.
Maybe I could get the audio book.
Yeah.
And George Costanza could read it to me.
Yeah. See, audiobook, perfect way to internalize.
Yeah, that works if you're like, if you have to drive a lot or something, audiobooks can be pretty good for that.
Yeah.
But I was just curious, because as a writer yourself,
I
was just curious if that was part of
not
what you did.
Not a big reader, I am going to, I said I was going to work on it. I got a little better at the end of the year.
Look, I'm 50, so I'm just starting to work on it.
Yo,
so you've got
congratulations.
Plenty of time.
Okay, word. I believe you.
You have plenty of time to figure it out.
And while we're talking about writing, another thing I was curious about is sort of your sort of writing style and your notation for the flow, because I know there's sort of like a lot of ways you can do that.
Yeah.
And so I'm just curious what your approach to that is. So, you know, sort of what kind of notation you do, or whether there's no notation at all and you're just writing down words on a page and it's like you got the rest of it in your head.
Yeah, that's usually it is once I hear the music, I'm also really obsessed with drums, so I like say it out loud. I kind of like scat it out loud first. So I'm like, right? And then I'll just be like, okay, cool. I'm like walking down the street and I did this new thing. Appendix up on the face, appendix the new thing. I'm like, what's the story? What's the thing like that's happening? And every line, I go back to the beginning. Every new line, I go back to the beginning. By the time I'm done, I know the verse.
Yes.
But other than that, there's like no other notation. It's just, I just write it. I know it well enough because I'm writing it to this very specific flow. You probably noticed this in November 3rd. There's some like 28 bars.
Yeah.
I didn't know how to count bars until the end of the year. I was like, I guess I should start doing that, yeah. Right? And then my boy Hamstank and even Latrell was like, nah, yo, like, I love that. Keep that.
Yeah,
just
not
do
everybody
do.
Does that. Yeah. You know, some people do the 16 bars, yeah. But it's like, there's lots of ways to
there's
do
so
it.
There's so many ways to do it. Yeah. I'm trying to keep the whatever feels good, I'll end it when it's done.
Yeah.
Yeah, but not too long because nobody wants to sit through a 3-minute verse, you know.
No,
maybe.
But that is one of the things I love about your music is just how many different sort of vocal styles you have and how many different sort of paces to the flow. And
yeah.
It's like every song is different. And even within the songs, there was one of the songs I was talking about, like the X-Factored, you know, there was a real contrast between the chorus and the way it flowed into the verses.
Yeah, I'm a shower singer.
Yeah.
I enjoy it.
I was going to ask you about the singing.
Yeah.
Do you approach a song thinking you're going to sing parts of it?
Nah, not until I hear it. When I hear the words,
hear the melody in the words.
Yeah, I hear the melody mostly, and I'm just like, okay.
Was that a decision you made, or is that a to start singing, or is that a decision someone said, you know what, you should sing that instead?
No, I had 4 songs ready to go, but by the time I started writing November 3rd, September, we decided we were going to put it out in November, so I had 2 months to write the other 8. X Factor was one of the ones I had already written, and because I'm a closet singer, I didn't mind writing that. There was no pressure. Then I was like, oh, now I got to do this on a microphone. This is crazy. So I like always really secretly like singing. I'm just not the best at it.
You're a good singer.
Thanks. That's
yeah,
fine.
Like you mentioned your girl. Like I love the, that's got a catchy chorus.
Yeah, that's
like,
that's
I can
my.
Go with that one.
But there's a very when you start singing. I don't know how to explain it, but something changes a little bit within the song. Mm. It maybe makes me listen a little harder or...
Interesting. I like that.
Yeah, that's something Lauryn Hill was so good at. Like, that's I love that on Lauryn Hill, the way she can go, you know, back and forth between rapping and singing. It's like...
Yeah.
It's almost like you're taking a breath when you sing.
Yeah, it feels like that until I'm on stage. Then it feels like, oh my God, I can't wait till I'm rapping again.
Oh yeah, really?
Yeah.
Do you dread coming up to that point?
Not
or is
dread it?
It,
I just, I'm so... people don't believe me when I say this, I'm so shy.
You picked the wrong profession.
I know. I'm like a different person on stage, but singing, man, that thing shuts me down.
Yeah, singing is different. It's like, you know, so Chuck was a professional actor. I was an amateur actor. The first time I did a musical, and I had to get up and sing.
Done deal.
That's different. That is different singing.
Now I've sung enough that I just know that I'm not that good at it.
Yeah.
It's okay, and I just got to own it. And like, singing on stage as a play is a different thing, you know?
At least
I've convinced myself that it's like...
But musical is also very different from singing with the band, though. Do you ever sing... without music in the background?
Yeah, I've done that like at so far shows. Woo!
Yeah, that's
something. Yeah, I don't
you like it. No, probably
I love
not,
it.
Huh?
I low key love it. I'm just so shy.
Yeah.
Sometimes I get so shy that I can't even. I'm just like, okay, y'all. I just wait for the song. Now I don't do songs where I have to sing if I know I'm going to shut down from it.
This is a little bit different, but I think it's really powerful at the end of "Say Her Name." How you keep rapping and like the beat is done and you keep going.
Yeah.
Like, I think there's a real power and weight to that.
It felt
a little
like
different than what we were just talking about, but it just reminded me of that.
Thank you, some of them felt like intentional choices to leave or intentional choices to do. The song was done, and I wasn't, is what it felt like. And I was like, oh, the song is done, but this isn't. Like,
yeah.
And that felt very...
So you didn't come in with that plan? That was just sort of...
No, I just kept running through the song.
Yeah, I love that.
I like
that's
that.
Happy accidents.
Yeah. That kind of goes back to our beginning of letting silence happen.
Yeah.
That's like... The silence is the music going away.
Yeah.
And you keep on, that's, it's an attention grabber.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, it seemed very intentional.
It
to
was,
me,
yeah.
To it,
and Hamstank just brought out that silence. He's the engineer that like I work with heavily and producer. He's just like, he's dope. He knows what he's doing.
Well, let's talk about the new album. What's going on with that?
The new album, I'm working on it. I'm at that place where I feel like it was such a blessing, like November 3rd, the response to November 3rd.
Yeah.
It was the first thing I ever put in the world. So I have this like fear.
Of a sophomore slump.
Yeah. That everything I'm writing is garbage and will pale in comparison. Uh-huh. And I keep like having my friends listen in a way I didn't before. And they're like, yo, this is good. And I'm like, nah, this is trash. The point is that I'm working on the album. I just...
Are you at the record co? Is that what you're doing?
I do work at the record company often. And then I work with my guy Hamstank too.
Okay.
So in those 2 different places. But yeah, I love being over at the record company. Those are my people.
When are you hoping to release it?
Yeah, 2019, for sure. All
right, good.
Gradual release though.
All right. EP or full?
I have a EP happening at the same time as The Fool.
Okay.
Like, that are being pouring out of me at the same time. So yeah. I'm just going to figure out what pulls me where.
Just keep working.
Yeah, that's all I'm going to do. I don't have a solid plan. I don't know if I need one or if too much restriction is how we got all the way into 2019 with no album. So...
Well, you're working hard, right?
I'm working hard,
so
every
day.
And you doing some of the new songs live, or is it all
Did you do any live that night?
Yeah, I did. The first song I did was new.
Okay.
And that was the only one that was new. I Feel Like Cole, yeah. That's probably going to be one of the first ones to come out.
Good. And you got a show coming up at Great Scott?
I do, right? On the 23rd.
Okay, January 23rd.
Yeah, Ed Balloon and Billy Dean Thomas.
Ed Balloon, he's moving to L.A.
Oh, yeah, I know. My baby.
He was going to come on, because he works with Alyssa too, right?
Yeah, he does. Yeah, I love him. His energy is... Have you seen him live yet?
I haven't seen him live.
Okay,
but
the 23rd.
A lot of stuff coming.
He's dope.
Well, thank you for coming out. I really appreciate it. I'm glad we got to do it.
Me.
And
yeah.
I'm looking forward to hearing your new stuff.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. And we finally got to make it happen. So.
Exactly.
Yeah, I'm That's grateful.
Right. Timing was good. It was great to get to see you on stage.
Absolutely.
At Boston Music Awards before we chatted. So.
Thank you.
Yeah, that's right.
At
least
you
got to see you.
Right. See the live show.
Yeah. I mean, I'd seen you before.
And we met at the local call-in show.
At the what?
Local call-in show at the Lizard Lounge.
Oh, yeah. You play
That's
there,
who we
too.
Met, yep.
Yeah, okay. So I've seen you like 4 or 5 times.
Yeah, maybe. We're like cousins.
Yeah, exactly.
Chuck's in your book.
I'm your new gay aunt. That's right.
That's sweet.
I've always wanted to be a gay aunt.
You see?
Do you think you could you rap something for us? Could you do something in freestyle?
Sure.
Awesome.
Well, not freestyle, but I can
whatever you want to do.
Okay, cool. Lil Project Kids coming down from the slums, hot boxing in the hot box with some hot box in the sun, taking down wine boxes with the bump, screaming free my niggas while my other niggas on the run. Remember living used to be so easy, damn. The prospect of death was for TV, fam. Nino Brown, we was trying to be that man. Where the movie ended off, real life began. Couple of us tried, but we couldn't see that end. I'm a sore loser, I don't plan to play if I can't win. Some of my homies live and die by the Uzi. Some of the homies start smoking on that dookie. Some wrong place, wrong time, wrong doobie. They be walking down Mania Cast looking like Pookie. Some of my niggas caught the bangs out of bounds with them things. And couldn't get a ref to keep it moving. They throw the book but don't want a nigga to read. Ain't that the definition of irony? To me, GD, PhD, same thing. No soul ain't no respect the politic can bring. Only difference they couldn't find him a next time. Can't hide Negro, hide a necktie. Even them checks lie. So I won't sell out, I buy time. Please, homie, respect mine.
Yes.
That's awesome.
Thank you.
Is that new?
Yes.
Yeah, that's fantastic. What's that called?
It's on the song called Dope.
I want to ask every guest.
Yeah.
If they have a book that changed your life,
yep.
Or a movie,
uh-huh.
Or a person, or anything that like you would gift to somebody, like say you got to listen to this album,
yep.
Whatever it is, it can be a couple things, it can be one thing.
Sure, album To Pimp a Butterfly by Kendrick Lamar.
Okay.
Book Jazz by Toni Morrison.
Okay.
Person, my mom and my godmother Laura, and Tay. Honestly,
tear it out for Tay.
Yeah, Tay's the truth. Snapback hats.
Snapback hats?
Snapback hats. Yes. And Kevin Garnett.
Kevin Garnett.
KG.
You know, he lived in Concord when he was with the Celtics.
No, I didn't know
that. He lived in Concord Center.
Shut up. I didn't know that.
Yeah, he's not here anymore.
Oh, Aretha Franklin. Sorry, that's
Aretha.
Yeah. Okay. But wow, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Kevin Garnett came up on the podcast one other time.
Yeah, which one?
When we interviewed the owner of the Celtics.
Wick. We interviewed Wick Grosbeck.
Okay. And he was telling a story. It was something about just how hard KG worked.
Yeah.
And there was somebody there who wasn't a
basketball
impressed
fan, with
the, and they were like, these athletes, they get paid so much, they don't work hard.
And then,
like,
Wick
pointed down, and he's like, you see the guy running sprints back and forth there by
that's
himself
Kevin
in the gym?
Garnett.
That's Kevin Garnett.
He taught me about, like, grit. I like everything a little bloody. I know it sounds weird, but I like my art a little bloody. I like things that are, like, have lived and survived something, and I feel like Kevin Garnett, like, he's just, like, a living embodiment of, like, sweat and blood and tears. And
you're
like,
talking about a guy who came
finesse.
Out of high school
right.
into the NBA.
Right.
Your kid coming into this kind of world.
And the way he plays is just, oof, man. It's something poetic about it, yo.
Yeah. Cool. And one thing I loved when he was on the Celtics is the way he would, like, never let, after the whistle, you know, if the other team took a shot, he would never let it go.
I know. And that kind of became a thing now. People will do that. And,
but I feel like that was KG that started that.
I think he started that.
He started that, definitely.
He's that guy.
Just to, like, make a statement, you know.
Yeah.
I'm not letting that in.
He didn't have to speak much. He just did it. Yeah.
He was a presence. All right, good. Thank you.
Yeah, awesome. Thank you.
The berry, the stranger the fruit is, the bloody the body, the sweeter the bruise gets, the tighter the chains, the wider the news. They wantin' the jewels, but they scared of them roots, cause the blacker the berry, the stranger the fruit is, the bloody the body, the sweeter the bruise gets, the tighter the chains, the wider the news. They wantin' my jewels, but they scared of them roots.
You lay down with them thieves, you might wake up gone. Don't wanna sleep till I'm a beast and I can wake up God. I'm tired of chefing up dog food in the wrong hood, but that blue visa shit, it only stretched so far. And that heat cut off, and I ain't got no real dependents, just a couple canned niggas depending on me for living. Uncle Sam wanna know how we survived this long, like how we could afford to keep them sprint lines on. Like he don't see that track record, these bloodlines strong, like these foreheads, we go get them, we risk lives for it. Me and my sisters, we like Cleo in them. I'm talking about set it off, not the mind reader and shit, but shit, we could probably sell you that dream too. Ain't a scheme out there, I don't think we ain't think through a thing we ain't been through that only made us stronger. I'm still working on my demons though, I know what I be harboring. I know when I was starving, they were all up in my room like Drake the Marvin, so I had to pawn my soul to keep my soul for a bit longer. There was college, I thought my whole life was gonna change, but it just gave me double consciousness, I'll never sleep the same.
I ain't say I get no peace of mind, I don't even get no sleep at night. Man, the devil's trying to take my soul, got me chained up in this game of tug of war for it to be alright. First it's gonna be hell, worst case scenario, you fuck it up and fail, it'll be alright, it'll be, I know. Right now, I just need for you to make it home.
I thought about quitting, like, man, fuck it all, came from the bottom. Worked at it this long and I dug into it claws. Now a nigga still locked by the laws, and a nigga still just a nigga to y'all. Still pushing brick walls, only difference ain't no piss in the halls. And a quarter mil to build my fitting with y'all, I still stuck up like a sore thumb. Look like a dick, that's what made them all come to fuck you. I could afford, you can't feel that heat, I see anger fester. I ain't made in a year, what you charge per semester? So what you expect, I gave up my respect for an expensive door deck and a couple lessons that I'll never forget. Like, they don't really like you, in fact they about despise you, but they feel you like a guy when they standing right beside you. Want you to answer to them unless you do a dance for them. Pose for a picture shaking hands with the man on it. What I'm supposed to say to my kids? Tell them chase after dreams like mine paying the bills. Tell them do like plan C's, but have a plan B into that horse pill. Can you plant in your damn seed in this game? You gotta be strategic. One false move and it's back to white Jesus. Everybody wanna be us, that's except when it's time to free us. I put that on my shoulders cause you motherfuckers need us, I said.
I ain't say I get no peace of mind, I don't even get no sleep at night. Man, the devil's trying to take my soul, got me chained up in this game of tug of war for it to be alright. First it's gonna be hell, worst case scenario, you fuck it up and fail, it'll be alright, it'll be, I know. Right now, I just need for you to make it home. The black of the berry, the stranger the fruit is, the bloody the body, the sweeter the bruise gets, the tighter the chains, the wider the news. They wantin' the jewels, but they scared of them roots, cause the black of the berry, the stranger the fruit is, the bloody the body, the sweeter the bruise gets, the tighter the chains, the wider the news. They wantin' the jewels, but they scared of them roots, cause the black of the berry, the stranger the fruit is, the bloody the body, the sweeter the bruise gets, the tighter the chains, the wider the news. They wantin' the jewels, but they scared of them roots, cause the black of the berry, the stranger the fruit is, the bloody the body, the sweeter the bruise gets, the tighter the chains, the wider the news. They wantin' my jewels, but they scared of them roots, cause...
We would like to thank Oompa and Tay for trekking out to speak with us, and also Alyssa Spector of Listen Agency, formerly Listen Boston, for the introduction. You can purchase Oompa's music and see where she is performing at oompaoutloud.com. Go to abovethebasement.com, where you can join us on Patreon, sign up for our newsletter, listen and subscribe to our podcast, like our Facebook page, follow us on Twitter, and look at all the nice pictures we post on Instagram. We are everywhere. On behalf of Ike, Ron, and myself, thanks for listening. Tell your friends, and remember, Boston music, like its history, is unique.